welcome back to the Harry Potter cast. I am one of your hosts, Dejor, and I love long weekends. Joining today, and always, is your other host, Sienna. Sienna, how are you doing today?
I'm great. I also love long weekends.
As you should, as anyone should. Unfortunately, due to her not having read any other book in the series, my roommate Gabby, your host for the last two episodes, will not be joining us as a guest this time. Instead, we have a surprise guest, social media editor for The Voice, Katie. Katie, how are you?
I also really like long weekends.
Yes, I love to hear that. Okay, so now that we've completed Sorcerer's Stone, or, you know, Philosopher's Stone if you're nasty, and we're continuing on with Chamber of Secrets, starting with the book. As always, we'll begin our discussion with general observations. So, what are your thoughts on Chamber of Secrets as a book, like, as a whole?
I like it. I think that it shows a transition. It's kind of like, for me, like when shit starts to get serious, right? Okay. Because it's bringing in all these other aspects of like different wizarding world conflicts and different like discrimination and stuff like that, where like they're still really little and it's still like one of the more, I guess, like childishly written books, because I feel like the style of the books evolves over time, but like they start really dealing more now with like harsh topics, more different characters, and you learn more about the characters too. Like, you learn a lot more about Ron and his family, and yeah, overall, I think it's a good book. It's not one of my favorite Harry Potter books, but it's like maybe towards the middle of the pack.
Nice. Katie?
I agree. I really like, I have a nostalgic connection to this one, because when I was a kid, at one point my little brother went through a phase where he would shred paper because he has autism, and so we got, like, we put all of our books away in our garage for, like, long periods of time, so we couldn't get to them. So for a while, the only one I had out was The Chamber of Secrets. So, like, I read that one a lot because it was the one that was there. But, yeah, I agree with Sienna in that I feel like this is where the transition in Harry Potter happened between, like a good, fun kids' fantasy book to being, like, this plot that is so elaborately laid out and like planned for like years and years and years and books to come. So I feel like Chamber of Secrets is where you lay the groundwork for like this really incredible story that J.K. Rowling has thought out like so many details of.
Yeah, definitely. And just so we stick with the theme of having a new guest, I forgot to ask the new guest question. What is your background with Harry Potter? When did you begin the series? Whether it's book, movie, how did you start the Harry Potter love?
I actually wrote something about this, and I just never sent it to anyone to be published anywhere in The Voice. But
it hurts. No, I'm just kidding.
I think it was over the summer. I don't remember why I wrote it. But, like, my parents were big readers when I was a kid, so they always read us bedtime stories. So they read me Harry Potter, me and my sisters, like, they read us Harry Potter. And then when the last book came out, my mom decided I was too young to go wait in line until midnight with my sister and my dad. And so I was super salty, and I slept on the couch. And my dad came, like, my dad and my sister came home with the book, and my dad stayed up really late reading it and finished it at like 5 a.m. and went to bed. But because I had slept on the couch, I woke up at like 6 a.m. and I snatched that book. I snatched that book up and I read it until like my family woke up, because like I knew that like I was last in line to get to read it, because I was the youngest one who was like of reading capability. But yeah, like it was a big family thing for me, because my entire family like read the first, I want to say the first like 5 books were read to me as bedtime stories, and then later on, like, I read them on my own, but I reread them every summer, and I always watch the movies at Christmas time, so I'm, like, a closeted Harry Potter nerd. I don't tell people.
You should.
Well, you
should.
You're out now. No, I'm just kidding.
You're out now. And so, to trail back, my thoughts on Chamber of Secrets, so this is my least favorite Harry Potter book, and I love all of the Harry Potter books, like, every single one. So, it's not that I think this is a bad book, because I don't think any of them are bad. It's just something about the pacing in this one just always makes it the one that's the most difficult for me to get through, despite it being one of the shortest in the series. Like, I can get through Goblet of Fire in, like, a day, but, like, it'll take me, like, a week to get through Chamber of Secrets. It's just something about the pacing. But with that being said, I mean, I definitely agree about it advancing the story. This is where you start to see that the first book wasn't a fluke, that this is going to be, like, this big universe that's, like, has this expansive world of all of these different plots. I mean, so, yeah, that's my thoughts on Chamber of Secrets. It's my least favorite, but I love Harry Potter, so it's fine. Mm-hmm. And going on to our questions that we ask for every book, what is your favorite chapter?
So Katie and I agree on this one.
Mm-hmm.
We're both, our favorite is chapter 3, The Burrow. I don't know if our reasoning is the same.
Yeah.
I like it because it's the first time, besides actually going to Hogwarts, that Harry gets to go see a wizarding family. Yeah. And, like, see their house. And their house is so cool. And, like, so cool. Oh, the description of the house. And it's just, like, everything that you want it to be, kind of just how quirky and wild it mm-hmm. is. And it's, like, this whole big family environment, which is very, very different from anything that Harry ever had. And so I really just like that sort of sense of warmth, even though, like, half of it is Mrs. Weasley yelling at the...
Yeah.
Like, it's really funny just to see the family dynamics and stuff. So I really... It's, like, not a particularly pivotal chapter in terms of the plot, but I feel like it is in terms of, like, Harry's, like, self-growth. Because yeah. he's like, wow, a family, yeah. you know?
My answer to this is emo. I also love chapter 3, The Burrow, and that's because... Like, I grew up, I'm one of five children, and my house was really, like, we had a three-bedroom house and seven people living there. And, like, we all shared a bathroom, and, like, we didn't have very much money, and it was always kind of chaos. And literally, when I read this chapter, every time, it reminds me of, like, my family and my home.
Oh, my God, that is such a mood.
It makes me so emo. Every time I read it, like, I can picture, like, the kind of, like, chaotic, and, like, it's obviously a really happy home, but it's also kind of, like, crazy.
Yeah.
Like, I always read that, and I get emo because I associate it with my family. This podcast is just gonna be how much I love my family.
No, but I think that's so valid because, I mean, I didn't pick this as my favorite chapter, but I have the same thoughts when I think about the Weasleys.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's only three. I only have two other siblings, but I have, like, a gazillion cousins. Yeah. And, like, they were always over all the time. And so the house was just always chaos, and it wasn't big. We lived yeah. in an apartment on the 18th floor in the projects. Like, it wasn't a big place. But there's, like, a lot of, like, love and happiness to it. And, like, every time I think of Mrs. Weasley, like, I hear my grandma just yelling yeah. at us, but also being, like, really sweet and cooking. And, yeah, my personal favorite chapter is chapter 17, The Heir of Slytherin. It's the climax of the novel. It's when Harry faces off against the Basilisk and Tom Riddle, which is all one chapter, surprisingly.
Which is wild.
It's wild, right? It happens kind of low-key, kind of fast, but either way, when he faces off against Tom Riddle, because that chapter for me, I just, like, when you realize that, like, Voldemort, like, even as a teen, was the worst, like, it's kind of, it also, that. Like, just... The plot twist of, I mean, now it doesn't register as a plot twist to me now, but I know when I first read that, or I guess watched the movie, because I watched the movies first, knowing that Tom Riddle was, like, the villain and was Voldemort, when, like, his name changes to I Am Lord Voldemort, like, what? My mind? I was like...
The anagrams.
The anagrams. I was like, you have got to be kidding me. J.K. Rowling, your mind. So, yeah. That's my favorite chapter. I just... Harry's strength and... Oh. And I... This will go on. This leads me directly to the MVP of the book. I'm just going to start since I'm already there. Mine is Harry again.
Oh, my God.
I can't stop saying Harry.
It's very bold if you're a Harry Potter stan. I consider him, like, one of the least interesting characters in his own series.
That is honestly the worst thing that anybody's ever said to me because Harry Potter. I am a Harry Potter stan forever. I will limit myself to this being the last time I say Harry Potter as the MVP, I promise. But I can't help it. He's 12 years old in this book. And this motherfucker fights a basilisk. He fights a basilisk. He stabs it. And yes, he had help. But that shouldn't, like, that doesn't count the fact that he was willing to go in there to save Ginny and to, like, just...
Ron and Hermione were also willing to be there.
I love Ron and Hermione to death, don't get me wrong. But, like... At the end of the day, and then Harry's bravery is saying no, like, Dumbledore is the greatest wizard of all time, screw you, like, yeah, Dumbledore sure. gets a little bit more complex within the later series, thoughts on him may change, but at this point, I'm like, I love you, Harry, MVP, MVP.
It's okay to stan Harry for, like, the first two books.
It's okay to stan Harry for the entire series. Shut up, Katie.
What's your MVP, Katie?
My MVP is Dobby, because Dobby from the start is literally just trying to save Harry's life.
Okay, but he does it in the worst way possible.
No one understands me. Like, I have to go back to school. Like, I just, no one gets me, and this evil elf my is trying don't to like ruin me.
Okay,
life.
But you have to think, the way Dobby did it, what do you expect Harry to do?
Dobby removed, no wait, no, Dobby broke Harry's arm. Dobby was trying to help arm. Him
understand what I have always agreed with.
Dobby chased Harry off of a broomstick.
Off of a broomstick.
Dobby is a fan of the ghosting method, which I am also a fan of.
Jesus Christ, Katie.
And he has been ghosted by his best friends for an entire summer. And then Harry doesn't have to sit around, like, bitching. And he doesn't have to sit around, like, dealing with, like seeking closure from his friends. Like, his whole first year at school was a fever dream, and now he has no one, and this is his life from now on, and he's been ghosted by the wizarding world as he knows it, and that's okay because he'll move on faster.
Sienna, who's your MVP?
My MVP is Fox the Phoenix.
Honestly, I feel that.
Fox saves the day. That scene where he, this is in the movie, but also in the book, where he's just, like, crying.
Oh, my God, my heart.
So emotional.
My heart.
And I, at that point as well, like, obviously now it doesn't register as a plot twist, but I had forgotten that that was a thing.
And because she sneaks it in, like, what?
Yeah.
I'm she's a master. I'm also scared of birds.
Same.
Birds are also when he lifts everyone. Lifts and he's just, like, flying everyone out. And, like, I don't know. It's just, she's a master, I feel like, of introducing small details in a way that you, like, don't really notice them. And then they come back later and they're so significant and it's just like,
100% agree.
Yeah, so I just really love Fox the Phoenix and wish the best for him. Also, I think it's really funny when Harry thinks that he's killed him.
When he thinks he's killed
a bird, just burst into flames.
That's so good.
And Dumbledore's like, oh, it's about time.
Yes.
What?
So, moving on from happy, love, we stand to who was the least valuable player in this book. Katie, you want to begin?
I would kick it off.
Kick it off.
Ginny literally
please,
opened the Chamber of Secrets.
Please, Katie.
The monster and the bat. She brought the basilisk out here. She was writing to this diary because she was, like, emo or whatever and couldn't just, like, I don't know, make a friend and talk to them.
Stop! Katie, stop!
Ginny's the whole reason this mess happened. Ginny could have resulted in Hogwarts being closed or someone dying.
Literally, this Ginny slander?
I know she was manipulated. Like, I know that it wasn't her fault. I'm not saying I wouldn't have done the same thing, but I'm also the least valuable player in my own life, so jot that down. Ginny just, like, made so many big mistakes.
Well, I mean, you're right. Like, you're not wrong, but you're also wrong.
Also, she should have just made her move on Harry. Like, come on.
She was 11 and insecure and scared that Harry was, he was literally the boy who lived. He's famous.
I played the long game and it never worked.
Well, it worked for her.
Truly it did.
It truly did.
Another way J.K. Rowling does not understand reality.
My least valuable player is Lucius Malfoy. He first of all, if you want to blame anybody, he literally gives Ginny the diary that causes her to
so
do
stupid,
all this.
Dude, he's not even supposed to do
He's not even supposed to do it. Like, Voldemort was not happy about that shit. Either way, he is my least valuable player. He is the worst. He does it literally not because, like, he thinks that it's going to bring Tom Riddle back. He literally does it because he does not like Arthur Weasley. And he wants to get, he does it to start some drama and to get Arthur Weasley fired and get his kids in trouble and, like, have this whole scandal. He is literally the pettiest. Him and his little annoying ass kid. Like, I can't stand the Malfoys. And Lucius Malfoy is the least valuable player because he starts this whole mess for no reason other than being petty. Sienna?
Gilderoy Lockhart.
Lockhart.
I just, the whole time, every time he, like, catches Harry at a bad time and misunderstands what Harry's doing, he's like, oh, like, no, don't let fame go to your head, Harry. I got so frustrated with this man. I was like, you are useless. You don't even know. You let the pixies loose in the classroom. Like, he, and then at the end, he causes the explosion that just separates Ron and Hermione and them all from, wow. I don't like him at all. And
one
I think,
I
was going to say, I think we could also talk about, like, him as a character and, like, losing his memory. Like, how does that, is that a fitting sort of retribution is that horrible? Like, obviously, he comes up later in the books. Yeah. Like, what's going on there?
I was going to say, like, thinking about him in terms of, like, gendered questions, too. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about this, because literally as soon as you said Lockhart, I started thinking about this. But, like, Hermione Granger, who's, like, such, like, who's, like, that bitch. Like, so smart, really intelligent, super, like, driven. Like, it's a little loves bit
him.
Weird.
Like, has the crush.
Like, has a huge crush on him and is, like, blinded from her, like, usual logic by the fact that she's really into this teacher. And, like, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that. Like,
because, like, it's innocent in the sense that, like, nothing, you know, obviously, like, she's 12 and it's just, like, a crush. But it's also weird.
And, like, I get in ways, like, giving female characters romantic interest or letting them be both, like, smart and, like, super badass, but also, like, a 12-year-old girl who develops crushes on people is, like, a good way of building complex female characters. Mm-hmm. And, like, I'm not necessarily against that. But, like, is there ever a time where, like, Harry or Ron is in a similar situation?
No.
Maybe Ron with Fleur Delacour.
I was going to say Ron probably
but
with
it's different because they're not a teacher. Like, that's more like them within their own,
And Ron also
like,
is always kind of a dingus, whereas Hermione's, like, genuinely.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I think I'm a little more inclined to forgive it only because of, like, the whole, like, 12-year-old innocent crush girl. But I do think that it is, I don't want to say out of character, because at this point she is still, like, a 12-year-old girl, but it is kind of out of character.
Yeah.
And, like,
it's
Harry
not out of
and
character
Ron.
For Hermione to develop a crush.
It's out of, it's character, out of character for her to be, like, blind, sighted.
Yeah, to be fair, she doesn't lose her, like, intense study. Like, she knows everything this man wrote in his book. Like, she's studied it cover to cover. Maybe it's from, like, a romantic motivation that she's obsessed with him, whatever. But also, like,
and
she lose her, like, intelligence.
And when you think about it, Hermione does, like, solve it.
Yeah.
She does. She just gets paralyzed before she can. But she solves it.
Yeah.
And speaking
she really,
of...
She is, like, an underrated MVP of this book.
Underrated MVP of this book. And going back to the Lockhart and the memory thing. So, I mean, okay. It's, like, this funny gag, you know, like, he loses his memory and stuff. But, like, do you guys think that is that too harsh of a punishment? Like... They see him in the hospital later in the series.
Yeah.
Like, his memory's gone
forever.
Because
at first, he's just kind of like, ugh, this annoying dude, whatever. But then you find that he's really kind of malicious, and he's been taking credit for people's work
and
putting memory charts.
And
so
he has been wiping people's memories.
So, like,
memories
I think in that way, it's a fitting retribution, because he's doing...
And he did it to himself.
Yeah, like, he did it to himself, literally.
Literally.
And then he's just getting what he's given out to so many other people, and, like, he's just sort of stepped on all these more qualified, but, like, less attractive or less, like, conventionally respected or whatever characters just because he's an attractive white guy who, like, has the confidence, has the smile. Like, I think he got what was coming, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's horrible, but I think he got what was coming.
I guess I always forget that, like, someone wrote this and someone, like, structured this whole story. But, like, to me in my head, like, when I'm reading a book, I almost never think about, like, is this fair or is this justified? Because it's, like, it happened. Like, same in life. Like, obviously there's, like, systematic and persistent inequality, but, like, this isn't the podcast probably to talk about that. But, like, the idea that, like, oh, Lockhart did some bad things, and then he made a really bad decision that resulted in him, like, wiping his own memory while he's trying to, like, assault two students and wipe their memories.
Yeah.
Like, that's just, like, kind of, like, whether or not, like, cosmically, like, it's just and right. Like, it happened. And he kind of just, like... He, like, was... He was going to wipe Harry and Ron's memories. Like, he would literally have let
like,
Ginny die.
Literal kids, and he would have let Ginny die.
Yeah.
And, like, Tate said, like...
He would have let Hogwarts be shut down.
Yeah. And then wrote a book about it.
Yeah.
Like, so, I am definitely inclined to agree that Lockhart got what was coming to him. And, like you said, Sienna, in the beginning, he's kind of like this just annoying doofus. But then, like, he gets, like, malicious. And that's when it's like, okay, like, this guy can actually be, like... dangerous because he may be bad at everything else, but he's good with a memory charm. He puts such a bad name to the Ravenclaw house.
Yeah.
Anywho, going to more fun stuff though. Back to the closer to the beginning of the book. Ron and Harry taking that damn car. Ron and Harry taking that car. I'm sorry, but boys,
men are trash. this is proof that men are trash. Who would think this is your best viable, like, your
like
viable
we'll never
option.
Get there. We'll other never. The train is gone.
Literally,
how
just
else?
Wait for the parents. Just wait. Like, I don't.
There are literally so many other ways they could have gotten
so
there.
So many
honestly,
other ways.
Honestly, like, this
be
makes late.
No
you can.
Sense.
You really you can be late. Like, it's fine.
Like, I honestly, and then, not for nothing, like, okay, I get it. Like, they're the main characters, but, like, they got off way easy.
Oh, my God, they really
late
did.
Anyways, so, like, not only are you late, you also stole. You could have literally just been late and only committed one
you stole.
Crime.
Like, also, like, okay, Harry, I get being like, oh, my God, if I don't get on the train, there's no other way. Ron grew up a wizard. Like, he knows that my yeah. parents can take me. Like, why
Ron
is he...
really just wanted to drive that damn car. Really? Let's be honest. Really? He just wanted to drive that car, and he got the car. Destroy. I guess it worked out because the car ended up saving them later, but still,
yeah.
Either way, ridiculous. And that just goes to show that if Hermione was there, none of that dumb shit would have happened, okay?
None of that dumb,
this
yeah.
is why they need Hermione. They need Hermione, because if she was there, literally none of that would have happened. And speaking to Hermione, I want to talk about a really important thing that this book, like, brings up. We know from the first book that Hermione is a Muggle-born, and we get, like, hints that, like, being a Muggle-born is a little bit, like, lesser, seen as not as great. But this is the book where, like, you really get to start understanding, like, the hierarchies of the Wizarding World, especially through the character of Hermione.
Yeah.
And the allegories of being a Muggle-born, a Mudblood, and, like, the real world, and especially so early in the series when this is still, like, very much like children's at this point.
Yeah.
Has always been like very interesting to me. And I think especially with like Draco's character and the way like he calls Hermione what he calls her and then the reactions to it. I guess this is more so for the movie podcast, but I really liked in this book that Hermione didn't know what the word meant because she's a Muggle-born, and Ron had, like, Ron was the one that got really angry. Yeah. Harry, Hermione, Ron, Fred, and George, they were the ones who were, like, ready to fight, and Harry and Hermione were just kind of like, wait, what does that mean? Like yeah. we could tell
bad,
it sounds bad, but
know.
We don't understand, like, the actual, like,
yeah.
awful implications of it. I really, like, love that J.K. Rowling did that.
Yeah.
Because it makes sense. Like,
Why would they know?
What
they're kids.
They've
grown up outside of it. Like,
they grew up outside. It makes sense that, like, Fred and George, you know, the older brothers, will be the one that's ready to, like, fight Malfoy, and they have to hold them back. Whereas Harry and Hermione just kind of like, oh, no, like, this clearly caused a ruckus. But, like, what does it mean? And I will talk about that more on the movie podcast. But I definitely think that that was something that the movie fell short on. So do you guys have any, like, thoughts on the Muggle-born, Mudblood allegories and, like, how that plays in the Wizarding World, particularly with this book?
I feel like it's strange because I know one thing a lot of people have said about J.K. Rowling is that, like, she's big on, like, naming, like, social justice issues in her book, like, 10 years, 20 years after the book has been released.
Yeah.
And so, like, I'm not going to say that Harry Potter should be our Bible on moral issues, like, in no way. But I do also think that, like, this whole, like, mudblood idea and the idea of, like, calling people, like, obviously what's a slur, like,
yeah,
because of something out of their control or because of something, like, arbitrary, like, is for, like, I do feel like that is, like, introducing inequality and stuff like that in a way that kids can understand in a way that makes sense to them. And so, like, I mean, simple metaphors like that, like, almost never hold up in, like, academic spaces like Georgetown University. Mm-hmm. Like, but I think the target audience for these books are, like, 12-year-olds. And, like, when I was, like, 12 years old or, like, a kid, like, my parents and I were reading this together, like, it makes a lot of sense. And, like, it is an easy way, not easy, but, like, it explains, like, it introduces you to this idea of, like, inequality that seems, like, so ridiculous and seems to make no sense in, like, a really palpable way for children, which I appreciate.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, and going off that, like, it is sort of an entryway, if you are reading it in conjunction with your parents, for your parents to sit you down and talk to you about those things in a way, like, that beloved character, Hermione, like, what happened to her is terrible, and, like, depending on who you are, that could happen to you, or don't be a Draco, like, it does give sort of that inroad into it, and it does address the sort of, I think it does a good job of addressing the, like, so-called justifications for why he's, like, well, because they have less magical skill, or, like, it does a good job of addressing those in a way that sort of shuts them down and makes them seem ridiculous, where it's, like, clearly she's the smartest person, and and maybe it's problematic that she has to be, like, the greatest witch to be sort of, oh, well, she can't possibly be that bad thing because she's literally the best, like, why can't, obviously I don't wish she was average because she's amazing as she is, but, like, the example character has to be the, like, model amazing person for it to be, wow, she doesn't deserve to be called that. But I think especially as the books go on, they address more and more of those more insidious and, like, increasingly horrible and increasingly mature or you know, complex justifications, quote-unquote, that people use to use those terms. And I think it's, like, effective because it does get more complicated as the books go on, and she keeps introducing more of these reasons, and in a way that, I don't know, is conducive to, like, teaching, quote-unquote. Like, I don't think Harry Potter is, like, educational in that sense, but it kind of is.
Yeah, and it's funny because going off the educational thing, like, my aunt read the first two Harry Potter books for, like, in ninth grade or 10th grade for class, and, like, I don't, like, she didn't continue with the series except for the movies because, like, she's trash or whatever. But, no. She's trash or whatever. But, like, she remembers, like, the whole Muggleborn, like, discussion with Draco or Hermione and, like, that being, like, a huge topic that they discuss, especially going to, like, a predominantly black school and, like, discussing, like, race in that way and bringing in, like, this kid's book into, like, a 14, 15-year-old space in which they can, like, discuss that. And I think J.K. Rowling did, like, a really, like, really good job at balancing that, where, like, you bring on the heavy topic, but you do it in a way that's, like, suitable and teachable, like you said, Sienna, for kids, and then make it more complex as the kids grow up with the series and as the characters grow up. And so, to end off this wonderful discussion on Chamber of Secrets, Polyjuice Potion. We get introduced to Polyjuice Potion in this book, and they just keep using it, the rest of the series, but this is the book where we get introduced to it, and if you could mix up a batch of Polyjuice Potion, be as badass as Hermione, who would you want to be and why?
Do they have to be a Harry Potter character?
Ooh, T. I'm gonna say one Harry Potter character, one not.
Okay, good.
I'm terrified. I have Harry Potter.
Harry Potter character, obviously Molly Weasley.
Oh my god, like, yes.
Molly Weasley is that bitch. Molly Weasley, am I allowed to say that on this podcast?
Yes, you are.
Okay. Molly Weasley, like, gets things done. Like, she comes in for the kill. She's always, like, hardworking, like, there for her family. Also, like, and the last book, she's, like, killed, like, a pivotal character, like, the bad bitch that she is.
Molly!
Also, you know that, like, when you drink the Polyjuice Potion, it tastes like that person. Mm-hmm. And you know Molly Weasley's personality tastes delicious.
Oh my god, like, pumpkin juice.
Yes!
Yeah, that's what I imagine.
I actually love that. That was such a good answer, Katie.
You're welcome.
Do you have one for non-Harry Potter character?
This is so much harder. I have no.
It's hard.
I need to keep thinking about non-Harry.
There are no idols in
non-Harry Potter character. Jake Marr, clearly.
That is our exec news editor.
No,
former editor in chief.
We should do one Harry Potter character and then one voice staffer.
Wow. Okay. Now let's continue. I like that. I like that.
Jake Marr being a soft boy, a nice person, wholesome. I feel like it would be very calming. I want to know what it's like to be that tall and to, like, look out at the world that way. I just really want to know what's going on with Jake Marr.
So my Harry Potter character, if we're just looking at this book, I'd either Fred or George. For no other reason than, like, I just want to be goofy, you know? Like, they're just, like, having fun, but then they also, like, are ready to square up when Draco's disrespectful. And, like, I don't know which one I want to be. Honestly, I'd be both. I really don't care.
Yeah, you should be both.
I'll be both. I'll be Fred and George, and we'll just, like...
That's the way to live.
That's the way to live. And I'll get to play Quidditch and be, like, both the beaters, and it'll be really fun. So Fred and George is my answer, and then voice staffer. Whew, okay. I think I... Does it have to be current voice staffer?
No.
Lila Burke.
Oh.
That is my answer. I admire Lila so much, and I just want to be her.
Honestly,
so
part
bad.
Of the reason I'm trying to be Jake.
Is
Can we edit that out? That was inappropriate.
So yeah, Lila Burke is my answer. Wow. Sienna?
Okay, Harry Potter character. Ooh. It's gotta be Neville Longbottom.
Oh my god, Slowly Neville!
For the personal growth that he experiences over the course
Neville
of this
so
series.
Much.
Physically and mentally and socially, and he just makes so much progress.
Yes,
and
I just
yeah, that's,
I'm gonna cry.
To be honest, that's my answer.
That's a good
for Harry
that's
Potter.
Such a good pick.
Voice staffer, clearly Margaret Gatch.
Clearly,
like,
Margaret Gatch.
The MVP. She has everything that I literally aspire to be
literally.
In the near future. Like, she is my model and my example and everything. Not that anything's gonna happen to Margaret, but like, I aspire to be her.
Sienna's gonna literally like take. Over Margaret.
Oh, God. Jesus Christ. This is terrifying. No, but yes.
Yes, that was really fun.
In conclusion, Margaret Gatch.
In conclusion, Margaret Gatch. So thank you guys for joining us on this episode of the Harry Potter cast. The next episode, we will be discussing a movie. We will have another special guest joining us.
Special guest, ironically, will be Jake Marr.
Ironically, no, it will not.
Wait, what?
It's Jake Sanford.
Sad. I mixed up the Jake's.
Yeah.
It would not
is
be Jake Marr.
Literally amazing, but also we should get Jake Marr on this podcast.
We
or
maybe
any podcast.
Should or any podcast. No, and it's gonna be fun because this is his favorite movie and my least favorite. So tune in for that one.
Ooh,
do you guys have any socials that you want to plug?
No.
Katie.
As the Voice's social media editor, you should follow us at G-Town Voice on Twitter and Georgetown Voice on Instagram and like us on Facebook under the Georgetown Voice.
Beautiful. And I will plug my Twitter because the Oscars are coming up and you damn sure
oh,
I will be live tweeting that.
The people want to see it.
So at Dejure Evans. Thank you for joining us and we'll see you next time.